Going to turn to our passage for this evening, which is Psalm 46. If you've got one of these blue pew Bibles, that is on page 471. So, Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her, and she shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations rage, the kingdoms totter. He utters his voice, the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations on the earth. He makes war cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. So I wonder when the last time was that you felt you needed a little bit of encouragement to keep going. Maybe it was a long time ago, maybe it was quite recent. It's a feeling I think most of us have on and off throughout our lives. I don't think it's avoidable. And I think the spectrum of need varies greatly. I tend to have a mild case of it quite frequently as a parent, particularly at this one particular moment when my daughter utters this little question, and it's, Dad, can we watch Cocomelon? Now, I don't know how many of you know what Cocomelon is, and if you don't, you are indeed blessed, and I hope that continues for a great many years to come. But it's basically a little animated TV show with songs and things, and it is a special kind of torment, it really is. But it sounds not that bad, but when baby JJ threatens to sing you the alphabet in Spanish for the 10th time in half an hour, I do feel an urgent call to prayer, I have to admit. It's quite something. But I don't think that kind of first world parenting trouble is the sort of trouble that Psalm 46 was born out of. I think there are real challenges in life that can come at us and just stop us completely in our tracks. And I think that's the sort of thing that Psalm 46 addresses. When I was reading about this, opinions a little bit divided on the exact circumstances and events that Psalm 46 was written regarding, but one plausible possibility is a time when King Hezekiah was on the throne and his kingdom was under attack by the Assyrians, and many towns and villages had been ransacked, thousands of people had already been killed, and it had come to this point where Jerusalem itself was now under siege by the Assyrian army. And King Hezekiah was in Jerusalem looking over the walls at these thousands and thousands of soldiers, looking at how much of his kingdom had already been destroyed, how many of his people had already been killed, and probably contemplating, is this the end of my kingdom? Is this how my reign is going to end? And in that moment, what he did was he turned to God in prayer. And God responded to that prayer by sending an angel down from heaven, and it completely decimated the Assyrian army. About 185,000 soldiers were wiped out in a night by God, and the siege of Jerusalem effectively came to an end. So it's a very powerful story, very powerful witness from a king who clearly had great confidence in the God that he prayed to. Now, in our own lives, there are lots of things we can put in place to ward off trouble. We can have money tucked away for a rainy day. We've got our friends and family to call on. We've got people we can call favors on. Lots of planning, lots of things. But how often are those things the first things we turn to when trouble comes? How often do we try and save ourselves first, and then maybe when those options are all exhausted, like, oof, I really better pray about this, actually. This isn't looking too good. I think one of the personal challenges for me when I read Psalm 46, it presents us with this question of what are we actually going to do when things really blow up? What are you going to do in the face of that situation where you can't fix it no matter what you do? It's gone too far, and no matter how many plans you've got, you just aren't going to be able to make this right. So I want to look at this psalm really by asking three questions and see what the psalm holds by way of answers. So the three questions I want to ask of it are, firstly, why is it important to be clear what our response should be in a crisis? Secondly, in the midst of that crisis, can we be confident that God is going to be sufficient for it? And lastly, how could we better come alongside God in these times? That's broadly the three questions I'm going to be asking. So first one, why is it important to consider and have clear in our heads what our response should be when trouble comes? Well, I think it's important to look at what the Bible tells us to expect from our time here on earth. If you look at verses 2 and 3, when it describes the kind of trouble, the psalmist tries to put an image onto the kind of trouble that he's speaking about. It says, therefore, we will not fear though the earth gives way, though the mountains will be swept into the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. It's a fairly dramatic picture by any account. It's like the whole foundations of the earth are just crumbling away, like creation is being reversed and undone. And sometimes, in certain situations, that's how trouble can sweep into our lives. We're going along fine, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, something just comes in and it just completely undermines the very foundations of our day-to-day existence. One thing I think is clear, not only in this psalm, but in the Bible as a whole, it's just the simple truth that being a Christian doesn't buffer us from suffering any of the world's problems. The Bible is full of examples to back this up. 2 Timothy 2, verse 3 says, share in suffering as a good soldier of Christ. 1 Thessalonians 3, verse 4 says, we told you in advance you were going to suffer affliction, and so it came to pass. And John 16, verse 33 says, in this world you will have trouble. And if you can face another one, Hebrews 11, 35 to 38 lists a whole myriad of things suffered by followers of God. Bible clearly tells us time and time again that God will not be our escape from trouble. However, what I think it does say, and what I think Psalm 46 is a good example of, is that God should be our response to trouble. And I think that's really important. If we think back to King Hezekiah, whether or not this event is specifically what Psalm 46 was written for, it does show us that he trusted God implicitly despite the crises that he faced during his lifetime and during his time as king. Maybe the besieging of cities isn't quite as commonplace as it used to be, but the reality is at some point in our lives, we are all going to face challenges and problems of some description or other, and none of us are exempt from that. And at some point, things are going to crop up that we would never have chosen to face if we were writing the narrative of our own lives. So while we don't have a choice on whether or not to face these things, where we do have a choice is in how we choose to respond. So here in Psalm 46, I think it's clear that the foundation of that response really needs to be built on our absolute certainty that God is going to be enough for us to face our troubles. So we need to ask ourselves honestly, I think, do we truly believe when it feels like our world is falling apart that God alone will be enough? And that God is going to be sufficient to guide us through and keep us afloat. I think we need to be sure of that, because when trials and tests come, if we're not deeply rooted in that, that can very easily unravel. I mean, how often do we hear of circumstances in people's lives putting a stumbling block in their walk with God? It can be very easy to become despondent when these things come into our lives, especially if they're things that we can't fix in the short term and they drag on. And we get kind of sucked into the situation, and in doing so, we can very easily just get torn away from God, and sometimes we don't even notice it happening. I don't make this point to ruin your Sunday evening. Some of you are probably thinking, oh, I gave up the Strictly result for this. But the important thing, I think, to realize is that the Bible tells us trouble's going to come and go as part of life and part of our time here on earth. But, and I will put a positive spin on this, Psalm 46 makes it really clear the blessing that comes and the confidence we can take from not turning away from God in these times, but in fact, when these times hit us, actually reaching out to God and allowing him to walk through with us through those times. So if trouble's going to come, then that brings me to the second question. Can we be confident that God is going to be sufficient? So the psalmist clearly thought the answer was yes, and you can see that right from the very first verse. Many psalms open with some kind of lament, some kind of crying out, but not this one. This one doesn't do that. This one opens with a really affirming statement. It just says, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. And I just love that. I think it's just so to the point. It's just so black and white, and it's said with confidence. What the first part of it doesn't say, though, is God with enough of our own plans, and God with enough of our own backup, and God with enough friends and family around us is our strength and our refuge. It just simply says God is our refuge and strength. God alone is all the refuge that we need. Now, what I think is really impressive about that, from being able to say that point of view, is if you look at the scale of the trouble in verses 2 and 3, I mean, the magnitude of the peril there that the psalmist is talking about, to be able to, at the outset of that situation, be able to make a statement like that and say that God is our refuge and strength and a very present help in trouble, it just shows a profound faith from the psalmist and a really deep understanding of who God is. And that, for us, should be an immediate confidence boost as well in whatever situations we might face, because it's the same God who walks with us through our struggles that the psalmist is relying on for his. If we understand the character of God and the nature of God's love for us, then we should be able to say the same thing without hesitation, that God is my refuge and my strength. Even in times of anger and disappointment and frustration and tears, we still need to be able to hold on to that truth, that anchor that's going to root us in the storm of whatever's coming. I think the second part of that verse is also really important, when it says that God is a very present help. So that means right from the moment that trouble comes, God is right there. There's no, you need to pray 24 hours in advance. There's no, I'll pray and you'll get this kind of out of office email ping back. I'll be back to you in a week. There's nothing like that. We should be able to confidently know from this psalm that God is present and he's in it with us all the time, right from the minute trouble starts. He's there. God's presence is amongst his people. And if we confidently know that to be true, then we should turn to him at the outset of trouble and not as a last resort, because he's already right there waiting. And in reality, anyway, when problems on the scale of Psalm 46 hit us, there's nothing we can do to stand against crumbling mountains and roaring seas. And we're just too weak to stand alone against it. But that's okay. We have a God that's bigger than all of the world's problems put together. The Bible reminds us this, look at 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9. It says, my grace is sufficient for you, and my power is made perfect in your weakness. Now, how God chooses to navigate us through our struggles varies greatly, often for reasons that we don't necessarily understand in the moment, but we should always remember that God is present and he's in all of our challenges, and everything is being worked out for his glory, even when from our perspective and our understanding, it doesn't always look like that. I feel like God's provision and God's care is illustrated really beautifully in this psalm in verse 4, where it said, "There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God." If we go back to what I had mentioned earlier, when Jerusalem was under siege, I had kind of thought, well, what impact would a river through a city under siege actually make? And I suppose in reality, it would completely flip the likely outcome of a siege. If there's a river flowing through a city, that means they have a supply of fresh water for drinking. There's maybe even fish for eating. The people of that city will be sustained for so much longer than if they had nothing except what was within those walls. So why is the psalmist talking about a river here? Well, I think the river is being used to describe the spiritual resource of God. With God beside us, while it won't necessarily mean trouble bounces off of us, it does completely transform our experience while that trouble is upon us. The river flowing through the city of God, God's people, I just think is a really beautiful image and reminder of God's provision and care for us. And in verses 5 and 6, when it said, "God is in the midst of her when morning dawns, he uttered his voice and the earth melts," the psalm is reminding us again of God's sustaining power. He has to simply speak and the whole earth could melt. And he's in the midst of it with us when we are under siege by all of the things in the world. And I just, like, what confidence we should be able to take from that. Later on in the psalm in verses 8 to 10, God's might and power is reflected again. It says he's brought desolations on the earth. He makes war cease. He breaks the bow. He shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. Really big, powerful statements. And that's the God that we belong to. One who could erase an army with one word. A God that can cure the incurable, he can raise the dead, he can end wars. The scope of God's power and capability is magnificent, and if we truly seek to understand it as best we can, how could we ever honestly believe that God is not going to be enough for our troubles, or that we could ever get ourselves into anything too complicated that becomes past the point of something God can be brought into? It's just not there. And I think it's important to understand the nature of God as best we can, because I feel like we'll rely on him best when we know who it is that we rely on. In this psalm, there are two different descriptions of God. In verses 7 and 11, it describes him as the Lord of hosts and the God of Jacob. So how do these two depictions of God help us understand a bit of who he is? Well, in verse 7, when it talks about the hosts, well, who are the hosts? I think they are both the angels and all that's in heaven combined with all that's in the material universe as a whole. A reminder that the God who walks with us spoke the whole of creation into existence, and he rules over it, but he also rules over heaven and the angels. Another description, just the magnitude of God and the reminder of his power and ability to be in control, and that just that he's on a level far greater than any of us with all of our plans and all of our preparation could ever be. The description of God as the God of Jacob should be a big comfort to us also, especially in those times when we maybe feel too ashamed or unworthy to come before God and ask for help, if we feel our situation is just too awkward or too embarrassing. Because who was Jacob? Well, initially, Jacob was a liar. He deceived his father. He cheated his brother Esau out of his birthright. He had to flee for his life as a result of his actions. A bit of a mess, to be honest. Yet God chose Jacob anyway. He took him as he was and used him to establish a great nation. He wasn't chosen by God because he was worthy. He hadn't done anything to earn the right for God to walk in his life. God chose him simply because he wanted to use him. Jacob was in a mess and yet God used him to accomplish amazing things. He walked with Jacob through his own self-inflicted troubles, and he still worked things out in an incredible way for God's own glory that I don't think Jacob could have ever dreamt about in the moment. Our God is a God of the broken, and we are only his through his grace and the sending of his son, Jesus. It's never been anything that we've done that has allowed us to come before him and have a relationship with him. So we should never allow ourselves to feel that we can't bring God into our situations, however terrible we think they might be. We need to remember that he is the God of grace, who sent his son to die for our sins, to save us from judgment and to reconcile us to him. And Psalm 46 is telling us here, just don't categorize your problems into ones suitable for bringing to God and ones not. It just is telling us to approach him as we are in whatever situation life places us in, because we can be confident that he's present and that he'll be with us in it. So the last question then, if that is all, if we're clear on that and we're happy that that is true, then how can we maybe come alongside God better in troubled times? Is there anything practical in this psalm that can maybe help us out? Well, I think there was a few things that jumped out at me when I was reading it. In verse 8, it says, "Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations on the earth." That part of it, behold his works. I mean, we could spend all evening going through scripture, looking at countless examples of the amazing ways God has delivered his people from trouble. The Israelites out of Egypt, David from Saul that we've been looking at recently, the story of Job, the story of Jonah. Jesus drove demons out of people from the possessed. He healed the sick. And I'm sure many of us will have stories of how God worked in our own lives through times that we have struggled, and in the lives of those around us as well. We hear them all the time, testimonies in baptism. When we think of all that God has already done, we should hold on to that and let that inspire our confidence going forward. Maybe when things are good and we're not feeling particularly pressed, we should still prioritize seeking to know more of him. If you think about it, if there was somebody standing beside you and you were told you had to place your life in their hands, well, if you don't know anything about them, you're not going to feel overly confident in that situation, are you? You're like, well, who even are they? What are they good at? What do they do? Like, what's happening? Like, it's just not going to be a situation that you're confident in. And the same thing would be true if you didn't seek to know God. Your confidence in God will grow as your knowledge and understanding of him grows as well, because all that God has already done, he can do again. It's the same God that led the Israelites out of enslavement under the Egyptians, the great superpower of the day. That's the same God that walks beside you in your struggles. Beholding all that God has done and remembering it is just going to be able to help you to trust him, to guide you as well. There's nothing new in this world that hasn't happened before, and God has been there from the start of time. A little further down in verse 10, we find probably what is the best known verse in this psalm, quite a popular memory verse. It says, "Be still and know that I am God." Now, when I was reading through this psalm, one of the things that jumped out at me in that part was just the importance sometimes of taking a pause. Maybe I speak more for myself here, but how often when big challenges face us, you end up in that sort of fight or flight response? You just chuck everything in the kitchen sink at this problem and just really hope for the best that it works itself out. It can end up in a bit of a panicked mess half the time. There's nothing wrong with preparations. There's nothing wrong with asking for help. There's nothing wrong with going to our friends and family about things that we're struggling with. Absolutely not what I'm saying. But what I think Psalm 46 is getting at, it's suggesting that that's maybe not the place that we start. I feel like it's suggesting that we should stop, take a breath, steady ourselves, and approach God first, and let him walk with you through your situation from the outset, knowing that he is the Lord of hosts and the God of Jacob. Those descriptions of God are so important, the psalmist has put them in twice. And down the right-hand side of the passage, you see this little word, Selah, three times. It's a Hebrew word, and it's essentially a musical direction from the psalmist, but it means pause. And I feel like in today's society, probably more than ever, taking a pause is just such a foreign concept. This kind of frenetic pace that modern-day life has found itself moving in can be manic, but without a pause and a breath sometimes, it's just so easy to charge ahead and forget completely about bringing things to God in prayer in the first place. I think the psalm can be a reminder that without taking stock in any situation, God could be the first thing that we try to push out, not even intentionally. And it's trying to teach us against that, because I feel like you'll find yourself much more blessed in any situation if you tackle it with God involved. And I feel like that's what the psalmist is trying to convey to us here as well. Knowing that he is God in your situation means also knowing that he is sovereign over that situation and knowing that God will work through it for his ultimate glory. And we need to remember our ultimate aim as Christians is to glorify God and to spend eternity in heaven worshiping and enjoying him. It's not necessarily to try and carve out the path of least resistance through life. And being a Christian and trying to glorify God and serve him, it doesn't mean that we're never going to run into trouble, and it doesn't mean that we're always going to have things going our way, and it doesn't mean that we're not going to have to face things that we would rather not. But God doesn't abandon those who are in him, regardless of how we might feel in that situation. God does not abandon us. There will always be things in life that happen to us and around us that we just don't understand. But whatever you might face, just remember that as Christians, we face it alongside a sovereign God. And he will be with us, and nothing that happens out with his control. If you read any commentary on Psalm 46, sooner or later, all of them will mention Martin Luther, part of the reason why this psalm is so well known. This was the psalm that he clung to and sang repeatedly during the darkest years of the Reformation to give himself a boost and a lift and to remind himself of what he should be focused on. It was a constant source of strength to him through all of the dangers and the struggles and the setbacks that he faced. And Spurgeon quotes him in his book, The Treasury of David, where Luther says this of Psalm 46. He says, "We sing this psalm to the praise of God because God is with us and powerfully and miraculously preserves and defends his church and his word against all fanatical spirits, against the gates of hell, against the implacable hatred of the devil, and against all of the assaults of the world, the flesh, and sin." Ultimately, this psalm goes on to inspire a hymn that Martin Luther wrote, "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God." But I think what Luther understood and what the psalmist understood, I've said it before and I'll say it again, but the Christian life does not buffer us from any of the ills of the world. Sometimes being a Christian makes life a bit more difficult than if we just decided to live life for ourselves and our own gain. But no matter what you're faced with in your lifetime, let Psalm 46 be a potent reminder of who we have alongside us as we face them. We're not abandoned to our problems. If you reach out to God in your time of need, God will respond. And as Stuart reminded us this morning in the sermon, sometimes that response might be quiet. It might not be dramatic, Hollywood-style, supernatural stuff, but he will respond. And we need to remember that and remember to walk with him each day, strengthening that relationship in the good times so that we can take refuge in it in the bad times. For the Christian, we know that all of the pain and trouble and stress this world can bring is not all there is. This world is just a blink of an eye in the grand scheme of things. And beyond it awaits for us an eternity in heaven, returned to our Creator, where all pain and suffering and sadness is gone, and we are going to be restored in a way that God had always intended. But until then, until that day, let Psalm 46 be a reminder to walk with him through life in all of its ups and downs, and to keep our eyes focused on him first. If you're not a Christian and you're struggling just now and maybe trying to hold it all in your own strength and in your own hands just isn't quite cutting it, maybe Psalm 46 could be a gentle challenge, maybe to turn to God and see how he responds and to see what he does in your life. There's plenty of people here who would be more than happy to speak and pray with you about anything that you're struggling with. I hadn't come across Martin Luther's hymn before I was preparing this sermon, but I did read through it, and I think just in closing, I just want to leave you with the final verse of it, which I think is just such an amazing reminder of where our gaze should be. Don't worry, I'm not going to sing it, so you can breathe a relief there. So the last verse is this: that word above all earthly powers, no thanks to them abideth. The Spirit and the gifts are ours, through them who with us sideth. Let goods and kindred go, this mortal life also. The body they may kill, God's truth abideth still. His kingdom is forever. Let's just pray. Father God, we thank you for your love for us, and that no matter what we face in life, we do not have to face it alone. As we come round the table shortly to remember your son's sacrifice for us, we pray you would fill us with an attitude of humility and gratitude for that greatest of gifts, so that we, by faith, can be restored to your kingdom through Jesus. Amen.